Laws that have been emerging in Canada and the US over the last decade and a half or so around copyright and what the recording industry is calling digital rights management, or DRM, have outraged nerds in the free software movement and people using file sharing technologies like BitTorrent, Napster, and Kazaa. Black Mask has reported on the outrage over copyright in Sweden, where enough people have flocked to the Pirate Party that they've scored a seat in the European Parliament. Increasingly, people with disabilities are adding their voices to those critical of these same laws. One of the main issues at hand is the potential availability of media in accessible formats. Jesse Brown brings out some of the tensions around this in an episode of his podcast called Search Engine last month.
Blind readers are a relatively small market. Braille books are expensive to publish, so bestsellers and such are the books that make the cut, and the long tail gets cut off. And so does, effectively, the access of blind people and visually impaired people to the majority of published works. But now, software exists that will turn any text file into Braille. So blind people can now buy ebooks and run them through software like RoboBraille, and then, amazingly, read them. But in order to do this, blind people have to break the copyright on those ebooks and break the digital rights management locks set up to stop people from copying and pasting the text. Now, last week in Geneva, the World Intellectual Property Organization, WIPO, met and a few countries, Brazil, Ecuador, and Paraguay, put forth a treaty that would give visually impaired people an exemption that would allow them to legally read these books. So, who could have a problem with that? Well, the US did. And then Canada joined them, along with a number of other developed nations that have decided to take a tough, no-exemption line on intellectual property abuses. Now, I probably would have never known about this. It doesn't seem like there were many journalists present at this WIPO meeting in Geneva, but a guy named James Love from a disability rights group, he was there, and he tweeted this, and a bunch of people started asking questions. I was one of them, trying to get an interview with Canada's rep in Geneva, a guy named Bruce Couchman from Industry Canada. I wanted to ask Mr. Couchman why Canada would possibly want to stop blind people from reading books that they paid for. He never got back to me. And then the effort to block the treaty failed. The exemption treaty will be considered at the next WIPO meeting. So, no interview, no treaty block, no news. It's unnews. But I still thought you should know.
That was Jesse Brown on his podcast, Search Engine. This issue of accessibility of formats has become significant enough that the AEBC, that's the Alliance for the Equality of Blind Canadians, recently passed a number of resolutions around copyright and what's called digital rights management, or DRM, which is all but universally loved by corporate lawyers and loathed by copyright activists. Black Mask talked about the resolutions with Mark Workman, National Secretary of the AEBC.
Thanks for talking with Black Mask, Mark. Can you start just by talking about the Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians?
The Alliance for Equality of Blind Canadians is an advocacy group. We focus on preventing new barriers from being put up and removing the old barriers that exist for blind, deafblind, and partially sighted Canadians, and we have a number of chapters across the country.
Earlier this month, at I think it was a biennial conference of the AEBC, there were some resolutions passed around copyright reform. Can you talk about those?
Yes, that is correct. In New Westminster, British Columbia, we held our biannual conference, and we passed a number of resolutions dealing with a couple of aspects of copyright reform. So there's sort of two broad categories, I think, that were included in our resolutions. But before I get to that, I think it's helpful if I provide just a little bit of background on the current state of copyright and alternative format production in Canada. So right now, as it stands, when someone wants to produce an alternative format copy of a work, for a person with a perceptual disability, they do this under an exemption in the Copyright Act. So in Section 32, there's an exemption for a person or a nonprofit group who wants to work on behalf of a person with a perceptual disability to produce a specialized format version of a copyrighted work. So in other words, you don't have to ask permission if you're going to do it on behalf of a person with a perceptual disability. You're allowed to take a copyrighted work and create a specialized format version of that work for the person with a perceptual disability.
And sorry, is this specific to electronic formats or across all kind of formats?
This would cover all kinds of formats. So we could take a print book and we could turn it into Braille, turn it into an audio copy, turn it into an electronic copy. The key word they give in the Copyright Act is a specialized format version, and it's not clear to me exactly what counts as specialized, you know, for a person with a perceptual mm-hmm. disability. But I think what they had in mind at the time was Braille, was maybe a four-track cassette version of the work. Now times have changed, and it's not clear that having that restriction to a specialized format is very helpful for persons with perceptual disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
But so as I was saying, right now we have this blanket exemption in Section 32 of the Act, and it seems like a good idea, I think. Intuitively, rather than asking permission every time from a copyright holder, you have this blanket exemption to go ahead and produce a specialized format version. The problem that we feel has arisen is that this exemption has essentially absolved publishers, government, and authors from any responsibility to make the work accessible to blind people. So right now they say you have an exemption, you can go ahead and do it without our permission, but we have no responsibility to make the work accessible. And the AEBC took the position in our resolutions that access to information is a right. And when I say it's a right, I just mean to distinguish it from something that it would be nice to have. So, and the key thing about a right is that it implies a corresponding obligation or duty. And so it's our position that publishers, government, and authors have obligations to work to make information accessible, copyrighted works accessible to print-disabled Canadians, and that they've been neglecting these obligations. So that's one, that's one sort of general strain in the resolutions. Mm-hmm. There was a second broad category or aspect to the resolutions, and that was this larger copyright debate that's going on right now. There's right now a broader debate in which the average person is becoming more and more interested in copyright, whereas once I think copyright was sort of the domain of lawyers and high-level bureaucrats and industry people. Now the average consumer is becoming more and more interested in copyright, especially with regard to digital rights management, anti-circumvention technology, file sharing, fair use, and those sorts of things. And so a couple of our resolutions spoke to that aspect of the broader debate insofar as we passed a resolution on fair dealing and promoted the expansion of that concept, and we passed a resolution expressing concerns about the restriction of anti-circumvention technology and how that could possibly affect blind, partially sighted and deafblind Canadians.
So what's meant first of all by fair dealing?
Fair dealing is another sort of exemption in the Copyright Act. It's contained in Section 29, and it lists a couple of situations where what might otherwise be construed as a copyright violation is in fact permissible. So some of them, I don't remember the five that are listed, but a couple of them off the top of my head are criticism, private study, research review, news reporting is another one. And so all of these situations, if you were to copy a work or produce a copy of a work under these conditions, it would be construed as fair dealing and not a violation of copyright.
And so is this the same thing when people talk about fair use? Is that maybe a U.S. version of the same idea?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sort of use the terms interchangeably. I'm not sure exactly which one belongs to the U.S., which one belongs to the Canadian, but yeah, they are the same thing.
Okay. And so what exactly has the AEBC called for in terms of fair dealing, an expansion of fair dealing?
What we've said in one resolution is that we'd like to see those five categories that are listed, we'd like to see that become an illustrative list rather than an exhaustive list. So right now, those are essentially the five categories of fair dealing. And we'd like to see it be opened up to say these are examples of fair dealing, and other situations could be construed as fair dealing as well. And what we had in mind was alternative format production. Rather than having it take place under this Section 32 exemption, we could have it be construed as a kind of fair dealing. So people would be free to produce alternative formats under fair dealing rather than the exemption for persons with perceptual disabilities.
So at the same time as looking to put some of the onus on the government and on kind of culture producers to make works available in different accessible formats, you're also looking to expand the fair dealing so people can go out and do it themselves.
Yes, and I think there's a few ways in which, if we were to expand the fair dealing provision, that this might affect us. One would be we could get rid of this restriction to specialized formats. That could possibly be sort of tossed out the window as not necessarily as alternative formats themselves could be produced under fair dealing without being restricted. So that's one way it could impact us. Another one is large print production. Currently under Section 32, which was the exemption that I mentioned earlier, it specifically says that large print copies of a work aren't exempt in the way that other specialized format versions are. And this is a problem, of course, for a lot of partially sighted people who rely on large print. So one of our resolutions actually said that we'd like to see this Section 32 amended and to get rid of that exclusion of large print. But again, if it were considered fair dealing, then that might not even be an issue.
Mm-hmm.
Another issue is, as I mentioned in Section 32, it restricts it to nonprofit organizations working on behalf of persons with perceptual disabilities. And potentially, this could be better achieved, like access to information could be better achieved if there was some for-profit production.
So
it's not clear to me that that's a guarantee, but it is a possibility.
So the exemption under Section 32 that lets people create new formats or format shifts, I guess, that just applies to nonprofits? Can individuals do it as well?
An individual working on my behalf, for example, I could ask someone to do it. It's not totally clear to me if I can do it myself. The legislation, the wording is a little bit tricky. I honestly couldn't say whether or not I could do it myself.
Presumably it hasn't been challenged in court or anything.
Not that I'm aware of, no. But it's definitely clear that someone working on my behalf or a nonprofit group. So my university can convert my textbooks into electronic copies or into Braille copies. Or the CNIB is a large producer of alternative formats for persons with perceptual disabilities.
Okay.
But if this were construed as fair dealing, then I could definitely go ahead and produce it myself, or I could have someone do it on my behalf, or potentially I could have a for-profit group do it on my behalf. I could, for example, receive some sort of grant from the government or some sort of funding from the government to go and choose who I would like to produce my alternative format, give the consumer a bit more freedom to choose the person that they would like to go to, rather than having only one option, like the CNIB or your university.
Getting back to the resolutions that the AABC passed, there's another one I don't think we've touched on yet. I think you mentioned it just as an aside, but there was one on digital rights management, or DRM.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about that resolution?
Yeah, we passed a resolution essentially saying that we didn't want any of the new amendments to the Copyright Act to interfere with our ability to produce alternative formats. So, in the last Copyright Amendment Act, with Bill C-61, it died last fall when we went to an election. But in that act, the government put forward another sort of exemption model when it comes to digital rights management and anti-circumvention technology. It said that blind persons with perceptual disabilities are able to, again, it used the same wording, an individual working on behalf or a nonprofit organization working on behalf is allowed to buy anti-circumvention technology, is allowed to use anti-circumvention technology in order to produce an alternative format copy of a work. So again, it gave this exemption to people or organizations working on behalf of persons with perceptual disabilities. But this raises the same sorts of problems. Is this technology going to be accessible to blind people themselves? In the sense that, are we going to be able to operate the technology with our computers? Is it going to be inexpensive enough that we can operate it, or is it going to be, again, left only up to a sort of large nonprofit organization like CNIB to produce these works? So we have some concerns about this exemption model in respect to anti-circumvention technology and digital rights management.
The activities that are being described by the resolutions, are they... I guess I'm just kind of wondering what the impetus behind passing all these resolutions related to digital rights now is. Is it that these activities were illegal before and they're trying to be legalized, or is it that it's kind of anticipatory, that there's a worry that the federal government might pass laws restricting people's freedom? Where did these come from?
I think the latter is correct, that it's more anticipatory, that, like I said, there's this broader discussion going on about copyright. A lot of these issues weren't around 20 years ago when the Copyright Act was last amended. There are just concerns that this has the potential to interfere with alternative format production for persons with perceptual disabilities. If you lock down the content and I can't convert it into a format that I can use, then you're locking me out of that. And then it's fine to say, well, you can go ahead and use anti-circumvention technology, but if I can't actually use that technology because it's inaccessible or too expensive, then giving me permission to use it doesn't really help me a lot.
I wonder if you can describe kind of what's at stake in the future. What could we be looking at, worst case scenario, and what could we be looking at, best case scenario, in terms of how people use and have access to the information around them?
That's an interesting question. Maybe if I give an example, I could help give a sense of what we could be looking at.
Sure.
So in the States, the company Amazon has this device. It's called a Kindle, and it's a book reading device. You can download books, and their text is displayed on a screen. Now, earlier this year, Amazon announced that they'd be releasing Kindle 2, the second version of the Kindle. And one of the features they said would be included on this device is the ability to turn that text that's displayed on the screen into speech that would be spoken by a synthesized voice. Now, blind people got really excited. Here was a mainstream product that could potentially open up access to hundreds of thousands of books that Amazon already has in its collection. But what happened was publishers and the Writers Guild put pressure on Amazon and argued that this was a violation of copyright, in the sense that Amazon had a license to sell a text version, but they didn't have a license to sell an audio version of the copyrighted work. And they were arguing that this synthesized voice counted as the distribution of an audio copy. Mm. And Amazon eventually backed down to the pressure and said that the publishers would have the authority or the right to turn off or on the text-to-speech capability for each copyrighted work.
Mm.
And whether or not you buy the argument of the authors and publishers, personally, I don't. I think that what Amazon was selling was the ability to create an audio copy, not an audio copy itself, and the ability to create an audio copy is perfectly legal. I can buy a Kindle, download a book, and have a friend read it to me. Perfectly legal. But the authors sort of put forward the notion that I can't have Kindle itself read it to me. But again, I don't think it really matters whether or not you agree with my position or the author's position. What's interesting is the way that this sort of impacts on blind people, but more broadly, the way that it demonstrates the amount of control that an author or a publisher or a distributor like Amazon has over the content that you've purchased. So you go and you buy the Kindle expecting that you'll be able to read a book aloud when you're in the car or when you're doing something else. And Amazon has turned around and said that actually we can turn it off and restrict your access to it.
Mm.
So I think this is the sort of, it really raises the question as to do you really own the work? Do you own the Kindle and the features that you expected to receive when you bought it? I think it's an interesting example of the way authors and publishers have a sort of a control over the content that you've purchased that maybe they wouldn't otherwise have if you had just bought a book and, you know, did with it what you wanted.
Thanks a lot for talking with us, Mark.
Oh, it's been my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
That was Mark Workman, National Secretary of the Alliance for the Equality of Blind Canadians. The questions he asked about whether you own the content you purchase on Amazon's Kindle have been more concretely answered this past week, at least as far as Amazon is concerned. They recently remotely deleted digital editions of two books purchased by Kindle users. The punchline is that those books were George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm.